You're listening to the CryptoCast podcast.
Welcome to the Crypto and Blockchain Talk.
Hello.
Hey.
Guten Tag.
Aloha.
Kere.
Shalom.
Hallo.
Namaste.
Ni hao.
Vivet.
Hello.
Salut.
Yassas.
Salve.
Ciao.
Bonjour.
Our podcast talks about the latest trends in the worlds of cryptocurrencies and the blockchain. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Crypto and Blockchain Talk. Today with me again is one of our best people who I love having a little bit of a banter with. It's Jonathan Dunsmore. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello. Thank you for having me again.
Boy, you sound so enthusiastic. I know you're enthusiastic to be here.
I am. I'm excited.
Jonathan is the founder and principal partner of Dunsmore Law. He really knows everything about this space, and meaning everything to do with crypto and blockchain, STOs, and all of the good stuff that's packed in between to do with the law. And today we're going to be talking about exchange traded funds. And the title of this podcast is ETFs, WTF. And that is because we want to explore not only what they are, but what impact they have in terms of cryptocurrencies and exchanges that are currently out there. But what I want to do is I want to start off with why we're doing this podcast on ETFs. So let's get started with that first of all. So earlier this week, a new ETF filing was undertaken by a company called Reality Shares ETF Trust, and they filed this registration statement with the SEC, or the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, and it was for an ETF. And remember, an ETF is an exchange-traded fund. So they did a registration statement for an ETF that will invest in Bitcoin futures as part of their investment strategy. That was only a couple days ago. And then yesterday, there was a notice that the SEC forced Reality Shares ETF withdrawal. In other words, by Tuesday, the SEC already forced the withdrawal of the crypto ETF proposal. And I would like to explore, first of all, what that means for all the listeners, what that means for everyone in the crypto space, and what that means for everyone in the fintech and financial spaces. So, are you ready, Jonathan?
Yes,
excellent.
I am ready.
Let's first start off with, what are Bitcoin futures?
So let me start off with saying, you know, this is all educational information. None of this is investment advice, or and it's definitely not legal advice. Take all of this with a grain of salt. If you have any questions, ask your respected professional. So Bitcoin futures. Futures contracts are basically promising to pay or buy something in the future. And so the best examples are farmers and selling their goods to the market, to the commodities market. So if I'm a corn farmer, right, and Kellogg, which is one of the big cereal producers, wants to buy my corn to make Frosted Flakes or something like that, will pay me a certain amount for that harvest. And they'll pay for it up front, regardless of what the prices are right now, but they're paying for it basically in the future. And so a Bitcoin future is basically that kind of same weird mechanism where you're investing in Bitcoin, but you're investing that it's going to essentially be purchased at a later time. And so for most of these funds, and the way they're structured right now is, and I guess the best one, there's an OTC company called GBTC, Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, and it does a little bit of futures trading, but primarily it's involved in buying and selling Bitcoin to make its own share price rise. It's actually traded on the OTCQX, which most people don't know. But that's kind of where we are with, you know, Bitcoin's futures. Bitcoin's futures was kind of the first step in this process of people invest money to buy Bitcoin and in the hopes of, you know, it either going up in the future or paying miners to mine it. It really depends on the contract. It really depends on kind of what's going on for the specific kind of futures contract, because Bitcoin it's not centralized. There's no Bitcoin company that you go to and say, hey, this is, you know, I'd like to buy 30 Bitcoin from you in the future, but I'll pay $10,000 to you now. You can't really do that. And so what happens is you try to find people who have Bitcoin, and you try to, you know, basically do these kind of weird broker dealers. And I've seen them, like I said, with mining companies, but that's a little bit off market or over the counter, as we say. And that gets really complicated. But that's the kind of general census of a Bitcoin future. Real quick, a clarification. The SEC basically just kind of requested that they withdraw it. They didn't demand it.
Request that they withdraw their registration statement.
Okay. Yeah.
Did they request that? Well, maybe I don't want to go out of order. Maybe you should first tackle what an ETF is, and then you can go into why they requested the withdrawal.
Okay. An ETF is an exchange traded fund, which means in that fund, there are a list of securities, and those securities can be anything from, you know, different tech stocks. So it's a list of, you know, the top 100 tech companies, or it could be modeled after the Dow Jones Industrial Average and have each one of those companies in that index. And so the difference between an index fund, which is a mutual fund, and an ETF is a mutual fund is generally managed in some form or fashion in a way that is closed out at the end of the day for the market. And so what that means is it is built around the premise that these funds will act as an index for whether it's the Dow Jones or the S&P 500 or the Canadian Stock Exchange, those type of index funds. Whereas an ETF could be an assembly of anything. It can include a mix of Dow Jones, it can include a mix of S&P, and they could all be very different. And there's a distinction between, you know, what could be considered a true ETF in the sense that it actually holds gold or some actual commodity, minus futures, because futures is not a physical commodity. A futures contract doesn't actually exist in the real world, while it may be on paper. But if I have a gold ETF that actually just buys and hoards gold, whether it's in a bank or someone's kind of private collection kind of thing in a warehouse somewhere, those type of gold ETFs exist, or precious metal ETFs. And so if I, you know, there's a coming recession according to every market analysis released recently, and I believe that gold is a stable asset that will rise in value as, you know, kind of the markets fall, then it makes actual sense for me to invest in a physical ETF that will invest that money into actual physical gold, and versus what is called a synthetic ETF, which is what Bitcoin and Bitcoin futures are. It's basically just a contract to buy Bitcoin at a future date or you know, transact in Bitcoin in a future date, because remember, it can be on either side depending on the market. And so an ETF, an exchange traded fund, allows you to basically act as a stock, whereas an index fund is a mutual fund that you have to close out at the end of the day. And so the best example is that example. So if I see my mutual fund following down and crashing because the S&P is having a really bad day, I can put in that sell order, but it will not be completed until the end of the day. Whereas if I see an ETF is all of a sudden falling and collapsing, I can get out of the market immediately. Now, that being said, this is still traditional capital markets, and so it's a basically kind of 9-to-5 kind of thing with extended hours for certain exchanges. And so the difference between an exchange traded fund and an index fund is the ability to kind of close out at a different rate. Your fees are a little different managed too, because the index fund is generally, you know, you pay $5,000, $10,000, $500, something, some type of minimum, and there's no quote-unquote transaction fee. There may be a leaving early fee, whereas an ETF, you basically pay whatever that trade fee is. In some cases, that trade fee can be zero. some cases, if you have, you know, a traditional brokerage account, that trade fee could be a fixed amount plus a percentage, something, you know, who knows? Really depends on the brokerage.
So, okay, going back then to the second part of that original question, then why did they ask Reality Shares to withdraw their registration statement?
So Reality Shares was using an exemption, and it's a very clever exemption. There's one for the securities side as well, because an ETF falls under the Investment Act of 1940. And so we call it the 40 Act, which means you're making an investment into something that makes investments into other things, kind of, is the best way to simplify it. Whereas the Securities and Exchange Act are related to an issuing company that you're simply investing into that company, and that company is going to go perform whatever it's going to go do. And so the Reality Shares was going to use an exemption from registration, kind of an expedited registration exception that basically said in 75 days, this registration would be active. And the SEC kindly basically begged them to remove this from registration. And we don't know the real reasons behind it. You know, there was a press release issued in, it's almost a year now, or it's over a year, a staff letter from the SEC, but it's regarding cryptocurrency-related holdings for funds. And basically, it goes to that whole, you know, market manipulation and you know, where's this stuff coming from and how do hard forks work and all of this, you know, what about a 51% attack and all these kind of problems that people have with cryptocurrency. And so ironically, one of the things that makes Bitcoin such a reliable source of wealth and that it is comparable to gold also makes it one of those sources that kind of causes a lot of problems, right? Because if I wanted to know who has a bunch of gold, that's pretty ascertainable for the most part. Whereas if I wanted to know who's got a bunch of Bitcoin, boy, that's tough. And don't get me wrong, there's some people that are working on that from a quantum computing level and from a kind of AI tracking addresses level. But finding the whales in the system is still very, very, very complicated. And so if there was market manipulation or there was some type of, you know, quote unquote pump and dump, you wouldn't necessarily know how and who that's coming from. Now, the same thing kind of goes on in the gold market in the traditional sense, where you do see these articles about a recession coming and all these other kind of gloom and doom, anti kind of pump and dump things, where you wonder, you know, if these people are taking a strong position in gold because they want to see the capital markets react to these either Wall Street Journal or Forbes articles or whatever. Now, some journalists would say that, you know, they're above that, and they may be, but I trust but verify kind of thing. And for the SEC and for the CFTC, a lot of this stuff is incredibly hard to verify. And so that's the biggest issue is for Reality Shares, which was only going to do, I think 15% is the limit of what Bitcoin futures they were going to transact with. That's a really small amount considering the 85% of the fund was in non-crypto related assets, was in basically foreign sovereign debt, which is volatile in and of itself, but, you know, something that the traditional markets understands. And so for the SEC to basically say, please hold off, that is, and this is kind of the drum roll, that is a really good sign and a really bad sign. And so the really bad sign means that this Reality Shares registration is not going to happen within 75 days. But it means that something is coming. And we don't know what that is. We don't know if that is good or bad, but we know that that means there is some kind of clarification. And Hester Pierce, the crypto mom, has basically said these rules are arcane. She's also hinted that there is some type of guidance coming. She gave a speech at, I believe it was the University of Missouri's Law School. And those types of statements are really good for the pulse of the SEC and where things are coming. But right now we have no idea. We do know, given that what happened with Reality Shares, that something is happening, right? Because that would have been effective basically 75 days. And don't get me wrong, the SEC, you know, could have tried to sue or enforce, do an enforcement action, but that would have kind of been really tacky and they probably would have lost that. And that would not be a loss that the SEC would want to take. And so in my personal belief, there is some type of information that is going to be coming down regarding ETFs within the next couple months. I hope it makes sense. I hope it's something that moves the needle forward. I am of the firm belief that ETFs are very good for the most part. They are something that you need to talk with a financial advisor about transacting in, because just because it says it's a cancer-curing ETF doesn't necessarily mean it has all of the, you know, proper workings of what are the best cancer-curing drugs in that ETF. And so when you say that, you know, you're a Bitcoin ETF, you know, what does that mean? How are you trading in Bitcoin futures? Are you like, GBTC, where you're just basically kind of buying and transacting and building that, even though those owners of that trust don't actually own the Bitcoin? It's the company that owns the Bitcoin, and they're doing the transacting. And so it's this really kind of complicated mechanism of, we don't know what's coming forward, but we at least know we're going to get some kind of guidance in the near future. You know, she's recently came out and said that these rules are arcane, and they don't provide a lot of guidance of how to move forward. And the lawyers that are being creative and saying, hey, we're just going to push forward with this exemption that makes this registration effective within 75 days, are catching the eye of the SEC going, no, wait a second, we don't want people running in forward and doing that, because that's going to mess up a lot of things. Basically, the SEC's grab of power.
Well, you know, I've just found two articles that were both written in the same timeline of yesterday. And the first one says, Bitcoin ETF virtually certain, from a finance expert, and I won't name names. And the second one says, chance of Bitcoin exchange traded fund, or ETF, gaining approval this year, slipping away. So you cannot get two more kind of opposing statements. But the one thing I can say for sure is that different companies, including, of course, the most famous being the Winklevoss brothers, they have been trying for the longest time to push ETFs through. Why have those not happened? Why have those ETFs not happened? I understand why you said this ETF, why this one didn't happen, because they were using a loophole, but what about the prior ETFs?
That's a great question. For the most part, a lot of the ETFs involve holding Bitcoin, and some of them involve the futures kind of contracts and things of that nature, but all the underlying concerns are the same. It involves market manipulation, it involves forking, it involves kind of these massive attacks that people are worried about, or, you know, stupid hacks, like hacks of an exchange, or there's a bunch of commodity issues. You know, there's only a couple commodity people in the U.S. that really take this stuff seriously, and so if you are a quote-unquote holder of a massive amount of Bitcoin, then everyone knows that you should keep it offline. It should be in some type of cold storage.
Absolutely.
Well, how does that work from an exchange traded fund kind of position? Unfortunately, a lot of these technology companies, whether it is Gemini or whether it is, you know, Reality Shares, they don't necessarily have the answer. And we're getting closer to the answer, you know what I mean? It's still feeling around its way in the dark, but we're dealing with really old laws. You know, the 40 Act is called the 40 Act because it was created in 1940. I think it was ratified in 41, but that's a long time ago. That's almost 100 years.
Absolutely.
And so when you're trying to update the law and move things along, and don't get me wrong, there have been updates and amendments and things as time has progressed, but it's a matter of blockchain technology is not something that was ever conceived of when the most recent amendments have been made for any of these kind of things. And so trying to especially adapt the cryptocurrency world to it is just something that is not within the realm of possibility right now, at least from what we see. You know, is it possible that a Bitcoin ETF will be approved? I think so. I think Bitcoin's large enough and distributed enough, and the risks are at such a small level that it just makes sense to basically give it a try. And that being said, it's not something where I imagine you look at the market cap of the top 25. I don't think anybody else is going to be joining that board, at least for a while, because I think it's a fair assumption that you couldn't say I want to do an Ethereum ETF, because, man, Ethereum, even with its new possible fork, there's some significant problems there. And that kind of leads us down the path of, if there is one ETF, it's got to be a Bitcoin ETF. And if there is a following kind of quote-unquote cryptocurrency ETF, then it's got to be something where it's either distributed enough or there's kind of an understanding that there's not a lot of market manipulation. There's not kind of the massive swings that we see for no reason within the cryptocurrency community. Or what we will see eventually is actual STOs being listed as ETFs. And that is going to be the thing that kind of makes more sense as this, you know, your cryptocurrency side of things to the blockchain STO side of things.
You're just making me think then, if you actually do invest into an ETF, then how can you keep it offline? There's a possibility of some kind of mistakes, just like what happened with Quadriga CX. Isn't there a possible problem there?
Yeah, so let's take it a step back. When you own an ETF, it is basically a share in a company. And so you don't own that physical underlying asset. That company may. So going back to the physical ETF for gold, the company owns the gold and you own basically kind of a share in the company. That's the most simplest way to describe it.
Okay.
And so for the Bitcoin ETFs or ETFs that have Bitcoin futures built in or something like that, it's the matter of, in a traditional kind of brokerage firm, those shares would be kind of stored on the normal kind of transfer agent platform, whose name escapes me right now. But that kind of mechanism is something that we've dealt with forever. We know where it is. We know who's got it. We know where the shares are. For a Bitcoin, an actual, you know, true, honest to God Bitcoin that is invested in, or a futures contract in Bitcoin, we don't know how that is stored. And so if I have grain or if I have gold, we know where it is. We know where to go find it. We know where to go to make sure and verify that it's there. For Bitcoin, we're still kind of developing out those systems. And there's some really smart people in this industry that are saying, hey, we'll basically be the commodities house of Bitcoin. You just store it here and we won't charge anything, because, you know, they kind of want that reputation. And don't get me wrong, it's a cool reputation to have. And I definitely think it moves forward, you know, moves the industry forward. But that's kind of the bigger overarching question, that one of the major questions the SEC has is, if you are investing in Bitcoin, who is controlling it? Who is making sure that it's safe and sound? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like all of these silly stories of people dying or, God forbid, something else, you know, mysterious or mischievous happens with Bitcoin disappearing because someone left a hot wallet open or doesn't have the private keys anymore.
Or they're just scammers, yes.
or they're just scammers. How does that deal with this? And so what you're having is you're having basically third-party service providers, like some of the, you know, custodial people that are in this space, saying, look, we will basically hold your Bitcoin. We will hold your Bitcoin's futures. We'll partner with brokerage firms to kind of make everything happen. So SEC, you don't have to worry. And I think that's kind of what's coming down. If I had a crystal ball, is the SEC is, you know, talking with some of these really smart people about some of the custodial issues, possibly with some of the exchanges, about how are you going to pin the price of Bitcoin, right? Because if I go, and this isn't really the case as much as it was in previous years, but, you know, one exchange could have an exceptionally different amount of Bitcoin listed. And so it could be a couple hundred bucks. It could be, I mean, during the height of this in 2017, you know, there was $1,000 difference between, I believe it was Gemini and one of the foreign exchanges. And so those types of issues are something that you don't really have in the traditional markets, where, you know, one stock is generally listed on one exchange. And if there is, you know, kind of brokerage happening, it's generally kind of not that far off, you know, with dark pools and things of that nature. But for Bitcoin, which is something that's exchanged globally, it's a little bit more difficult. And so the price of gold is generally the same throughout the market. There are, you know, some kinds of swings here and there, but it's the same kind of issue here with Bitcoin, where you have to be able to kind of pin down those swings and make sure that, okay, we're only going to use these exchanges because these exchanges are trustworthy. And then we're going to take this Bitcoin, if we're doing it kind of in a physical transaction of buying it and holding it, where is that going? And so what I think we're going to see in the future is kind of all of this laid out. And I do think it'll be this year. I do think that I'm pretty progressive about it. I don't think it's going to be the end all be all. I don't think that as soon as a Bitcoin ETF is going to happen, everybody's going to go, oh my gosh, you know, this is what we've been waiting for. Mm-hmm. And Bitcoin's back to, you know, $100,000 or $10,000 or whatever, going to $100,000. But I do see that the opportunities to invest in Bitcoin and the traditional markets already exist. And so whether it's going to a digital asset exchange and purchasing it that way and figuring it out yourself through YouTube videos or a professional to show you how to take it off and put it in cold storage, if you're buying a lot of it, or buying here and there and leaving it on an exchange and then taking it and transferring it to a digital wallet that's safe and secure and offline, or it's something as simple as kind of just managing your assets in the traditional sense where you are investing in, you know, different funds that have Bitcoin as the underlying asset, or at least part of the underlying asset. And like I said, and I don't own any of GBTC, but that is basically investing in Bitcoin in the most traditional sense. And so when you look at the opportunities to invest in Bitcoin, I think they're all still really there, whether it's the actual, you know, quote unquote, physical Bitcoin where you're buying it yourself, you're holding it yourself, or you're investing in an ETF or a BTC as a stock that buys its own Bitcoin and trades and manages that kind of little fund within it. But those are all options that investors have right now. So I don't think having an ETF that has a measly 15% or even 100% traded ETF kind of fund of Bitcoin is going to make a giant swing in the market or make Bitcoin rise to $10,000 again.
What about ETFs and market manipulation? I mean, if an ETF is big enough, it can really do some kind of visible or maybe not so visible damage. I mean, what's your comment on that?
ETFs are great in the sense that it will allow potentially institutional players to take a more active role, right? Because they may have prohibitions against investing in things that are not kind of within their portfolio profile. And so they can't invest in early stage companies. They can't invest in digital currency. They can't invest in all kinds of silly things, whatever their kind of bylaws and charter and different investment mechanisms that they've basically kind of required themselves to adhere to by putting them out to their investors. And so an ETF, the reason people get so excited about an ETF is because it will possibly allow for bigger institutional money managers to kind of say, hey, you know, now we can invest in Bitcoin through this kind of mechanism. And then that in turn will make Bitcoin rise because all of a sudden this one ETF, or, you know, one or two, three, who knows how many ETFs there will eventually be with Bitcoin, will have this underlying futures contract or like I said, physical Bitcoin. And that's where people get really excited because they think that, oh my gosh, you know, so-and-so could come and dump $500 million into this ETF and then Bitcoin's going to rise to this level. And you see all these metrics and people talking about it online and stuff. And I just don't think that's going to happen. I think there's at least enough smart people that know how to work themselves around the mechanisms from either a retail investor standpoint or an institutional investor standpoint that allows them to participate in this kind of ecosystem. I like Bitcoin a lot. I think it is a very unique mechanism. I do think it is in some ways a really great store of value. But do I think that having a Bitcoin ETF is going to just be this incredible market maker and make the cryptocurrency summer just heat up to unbelievable measure? Absolutely not. I think that cryptocurrency as a whole has its own place in this market economy. I think that it's going to continue to progress and evolve. I think there's going to be a lot of ICOs, and we're already kind of seeing this, you know, as crypto winter continues to drag on, that are not going to live up to their hype. But I do think that, you know, some of the underlying coins of Ethereum and Bitcoin and Litecoin and, you know, some other ones will continue to be around for at least the foreseeable future. Now, does that mean they should all get their own ETFs? I don't think so. I don't think that's a necessity. But do I think it helps? Absolutely. I think the more people that get introduced to this side of things and to blockchain and to cryptocurrencies is always a good thing.
At the very end of everything, you think ETFs will be going forward at some time in the nearish future?
Yes, I think that it is a natural market progression that will happen. I think that it makes sense. I think that it is something that will allow the SEC to kind of get a better understanding of how these market conditions could help influence the traditional markets in the sense of adding digital currency or digital assets to the traditional capital markets. But do I think that it's going to all of a sudden make Bitcoin $10,000 again? Absolutely not. I think it will make it pop. I think that it'll be a good trading day. But do I think that it's going to make everybody ask when Lambo and when Moon again? God, I hope not. And that being said, I do think that, you know, as a whole, as a system in and of itself, Bitcoin is very, very powerful. And I think the SEC recognizes that. I think there's a lot of investors that recognize that. But I do not believe that as an ETF, it is the thing that is going to make people go, oh my gosh, here comes the Bitcoin
resurgence
summer, or yeah, you know, whatever they're going to title it. You know, people are working on those titles and articles right now, and it's just not going to happen. It's not something that I believe, in my personal and professional opinion, that is going to just kind of make the rocket ship kind of blow up. I don't think there is a rocket ship for institutional investors that does not involve STOs and those kind of regulated funding mechanisms. And it could be something where it is an ETF that is on a blockchain that does invest in different STOs and all those other kind of crazy mechanisms, which is something the SEC is probably trying to take the bigger picture approach at. But like you said, looking at CoinMarketCap and going, who the hell are these guys? They're not going to get an ETF. Do you know what I mean? That recent jump up there into the, you know, top 20 or top 30 or whatever, most of those people are never going to see the SEC's doors, because there's no way to ascertain who owns all of that information, who has all of these whales lying in the deep. And if you did, if you were able to kind of figure it out and KYC it and AML it and go through that entire process, then you could be looking at an entire resurgence of this entire market. But that is something that I don't think the cryptocurrency community would ever adopt. I don't think that it would be any type of kind of market mechanism to say, hey, we want you to kind of register on this exchange and go through this entire KYC AML process and onboard all of your coins here so we can basically create our own ETF and then go kind of submit it to the SEC to show this is where we're going to be doing all the trading and that kind of mechanism. That would be very cool. You know, that's kind of a how to build another Coinbase kind of situation, but I don't envision that happening, not within this community, not within and the kind of the global ecosystem. The people that want to play well and do the regulated thing in the STO space and that recognize blockchain as kind of just the evolution of a corporate share, that makes sense for those folks. That is something that I think, you know, could really move forward. But for the most part, anything that is a traditional ICO or that's been out in the market right now, I don't think has got that kind of market potential. But who knows? The future is a wild place.
Well, Jonathan, I want to thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of Crypto and Blockchain Talk.
Thank you for having me. This has been absolutely wonderful. I love coming on here and trying to help clarify things, and I hope I did a good job.
You always do a good job. That's why we want you back.
Well, this stuff is really kind of overly complex because people are trying to figure out how to integrate it into the traditional markets. And so when you do that, when you add something that's very new with something very old, you get a mess for the most part. And then, you know, as things progress and time moves along and you kind of smooth out and figure out how to cooperate with each other, then you get really kind of beautiful things. And I think, you know, an ETF has the ability to be very, very beautiful for the capital markets, but I don't know if we're ready for that yet. I do think we will get guidance here in the coming future.
And I'm excited to see what happens in this space. It's going to be interesting. And I also want to see if your epiphany of ETFs coming through this year is going to actually happen. That's going to be exciting if it does.
It will be. And, you know, it's a matter of the SEC wanting to make it happen and people being cautiously optimistic. You know, the reality shares took the position that we want to make the right decision, and so they withdrew. And I think that's going to be one of the bigger decisions made this year is the ability to cooperate with the SEC and make these moves happen.
Well, let's watch this space. So I would like to thank everyone for listening to Crypto and Blockchain Talk. And please remember to like us on Facebook and Twitter. And remember to tell your family and friends that they can download us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Stitcher. Again, thank you for tuning in to this week's Crypto and Blockchain Talk, and we look forward to having you as our listener next week. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the CryptoCast podcast. Stay tuned in for more episodes.